Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon p.m. Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, if you can't listen live, know that all of our shows can be found online at answers.network. And I want you to know that I would really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference in the world together. Now, my guest today, he fits when it comes to making a positive difference in the world. And he does it in a way that reaches a huge amount of people. Now, what better way to make a positive difference than to help those incredible people that are already doing it? So by helping them to reach more people. Now, I want you to know that by bringing together those who dedicate their lives to helping others and those that are now in place where they want to use their wealth to help people. Now, Steve Caliper partners with nonprofit organizations, both domestically and internationally, as well as high-capacity families with an investment banking model to philanthropy. Now, having over 25 years experience in marketing, developing strategic relationships in the private, public, and nonprofit sectors, it allows him to do what is the title of his book, Doing Good Better. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Alan, thank you. I appreciate that you have me on as a guest today. Of course, my life mission is this journey that we're in to do good better. And so anyway, I appreciate you because I believe that you're also a man that is wanting to serve and to do good yourself. So thanks for having me on.
Well, and I appreciate that. And that was more kind of the reason for starting this show many years ago was how could I reach more people? You know, I felt like through my businesses, I was, you know, making a positive difference, but I didn't feel like I was reaching as many people as I could. So that was the whole reason for even forming the show to begin with, was to be able to bring on people like yourself and some of the people that you work with to be able to have them talk about different ways that other people can get involved and do the same. So now what I would like to do first, because you know I mentioned the term strategic philanthropy. And when I mention that to other people, people go, huh? And so what I'd like you to do is to sort of share with us what your definition of strategic philanthropy is.
Yeah, you bet. So there's different lanes of being a supporter to an organization. And many of us at many times have made a gift. We've gone somewhere, gone to an event, and we've said, okay, I'm going to write a check, whether it be a little check of 50 or 100 bucks or 1,000 bucks or even 10,000 bucks, whatever the amount. We've made gifts just because there was something that took place in the gathering, the function, the banquet. There was something that moved us or touched our life that we said, okay, I want to make a gift. And then, really on the other lane, which is stewardship, which is, you know, depending on where you are in your spiritual journey, it's, does God own it all, or is there a certain percentage that's all his? And now we're stewards of how we've been blessed. But the philanthropy piece is really looking at the question. What I believe is that we're looking at the question to say, I am going to engage and to be a part of, whether it be relationally or financially, with certain areas of interest. And then how am I going to make what I call strategic investments or gifts to organizations to move the needle, whether it be human trafficking, various topics, it could be at-risk kids or whatever the areas of interest, then it really becomes, am I being strategic and wise to make that, as you said, Alan, this strategic gift to move the needle in a particular area? And then I would look at the next layer. It's not about the organization, but what are the best organizations to achieve that objective? So when we have an objective in mind of what we want to accomplish, then we invest in the right organizations to move the needle, to do good, to make a change?
You know, I'm gonna share something with the audience, and I want, first of all, Steve, this isn't just because you're on here, because this is something that I say, I probably said 100 times to anybody that asked the question, is how do I know in this day and age? I don't know about anybody else out there. I get calls on my cell. I get text messages and everything else of, you know, hundreds of places that ask for your donation. But I don't know who's on the other, at the other end of that. And being a detective, people ask me, well, how do we figure it out? How do we know? And what I tell them is, if I go to an event and if Steve Caliper is involved in this and he has worked with them, the due diligence is already done. I mean, that's the bottom line. So please, for everybody out there, understand that if you have somebody that's already doing the due diligence for you, you know, call me the mechanic that doesn't work on his own car. I would rather go and know that somebody I trust has done the due diligence, and I can just happily get involved because I know that they're already doing the right thing for the right reasons.
Alan, well, thank you for that. You know, certainly I've been able to engage and to partner with, you know, several thousand nonprofits and organizations. Personally, I've been involved with, working wise, with over 1,000, but a couple of thousand organizations, even beyond that, on behalf of families and different foundations that I've served over the years. So there's certain nuances and things to learn. I'm a relationship person, so it's about people, but then it's also clarity to goals and outcomes and kind of the result of what it is that organization's feeling called to do. So thank you for that.
Well, I think there's another common thread that I see when I'm speaking with somebody that you're working with. And when I see a common thread, I tend to think that it comes from somewhere else. You know, in other words, when you talk to 10 different business people, and the mindset seems to be that we are not just there, wherever there may be, doing good, but we are there training other people who already are there or are going to remain there to do good as well. And that expansive view, to me, makes all the difference. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, it's paying attention and seeing the different connections that are being made that make me feel really good about the organizations that I'm meeting with.
Mm. Yeah, well, thank you. Alan, how did you kind of in the I know you're an investigator globally. What is this call that you've been in and this journey that you've been in that you've woken up someday and said, man, I want to make a difference. I want to do good. I want to lean in and to be not just a supporter, but you want to roll up your sleeves to help advance the work of some organizations that you believe in because of the theme.
Well, I appreciate that. And I love how you're flipping the script on me. starting as a teenager, you know, as a young investigator, one of the early cases that I went on had to do with locating runaways. And in fact, the owner of the company said, I'm going to assign you to working these runaway cases because you look like those snot-nosed kids. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know exactly how to take that, but I guess it meant I was the right choice to work those cases. But on one of the cases where I was on surveillance and I was trying to find a young girl that was a runaway, and the mother had hired us, she was from a divorced family, and I had asked, is it possible that she's just, you know, gone to live with the father? And she said, no, they don't have any contact and stuff. So anyway, so I proceeded to do it. And by following certain friends of hers and stuff, I was able to get to a place where there was a party. And I thought, well, if her friends are going to this party, she probably is too. So I'm on surveillance. It's dark. I'm watching with binoculars from a distance. And I see what I think is her. And it looks like, you know, she's there. She and it looks like she's getting dropped off by maybe her father or somebody. And she goes in, and there's all kinds of other dads, you know, dropping them off. And And as it gets later and later, and I start seeing there's also more people that are, you know, more looks like dads that are picking them up and taking them out of there. And I see what I think is her. So I follow the car and I get to what is a trailer park. In the back of my mind, I think, well, this is the thing about divorces. You know, they think they're communicating, but they're really not, because, you know, it's, she's obviously staying with the dad. Well, when I snuck up to look in the window to make sure I knew which it was a trailer park, which one she was in, the adult man was having sex with her. And it hit me, and I didn't know what the term human trafficking was. It wasn't in my vocabulary at that time. And this is so long ago that I went back. I used a payphone, for those that are too young to remember those. It's a little box you found on the street. Anyway, I went and called the boss and said, you know, this is what I have found. Well, he called law enforcement. Law enforcement went in. They met with me. They went in, picked up her, gave her to us, who took her to, you know, to the mother's house. But they went in also and made a bunch of arrests at the house where all of these girls were, because what it was a place to where men were going in and buying young girls. And it hit me so much that at that point in time, it didn't matter what kind of investigation the owner of the company assigned to me. I wanted to make a difference in that area. Being a young person at that time, it hit me so hard that I thought, this is my calling. This is what I'm supposed to do. And fortunately, I've been blessed with the ability to continue to work with families, either through the adolescent services company that my son now owns, in transporting at-risk youth, or locating parentally abducted children, or still going to, in some cases, other countries to break up human trafficking rings.
Well, Alan, just like you just described a personal experience for yourself, that's really the objective as it relates to just people thinking about, you know, how can I make a difference in the world? It's finding something that is meaningful to you, and then you engage. Uh-huh. You engage it. Could be multiple things depending on your availability of resources or time or expertise, or it could be one or two things or just one thing. But the point is that find something that grabs onto our heart, that we say we want to move the needle. We want to make a difference, whether it be a little or a lot. But I believe that all of us are called to do what you hear me say is to do good. I think that is our innate character that God's designed us with, is to make a difference in the lives of other people.
Well, that poses the question in regards to how you make your decisions, because if you are working with great programs, but you also have businesses and families that are coming to you for help in how to best decide their philanthropy, do you have a family or a company that says, we really want to focus on, you know, breaking up human trafficking rings? Mm-hmm. If you don't already have a client in that, do you go out and find out who's doing it in the manner that you would want? Or, in other words, does it work both ways? You know, do you find the great program and then you go to the families and go, hey, let me tell you about this? Or is it a little bit of both?
Well, it depends on the trusted relationship. So there'd be couples that I'm serving or family foundations, and because I know their interests, then they actually would say many times, thank you for introducing me to an organization that you're aware of, because there's alignment. You know, when we make the intro and then there's an appreciation, then there's an alignment. But if the family says, hey, we want to make a difference and we want to do X, Y, and Z, and it's not somebody that I might not know, certainly I've been blessed to know a lot of different people. I could do a quick little networking. I could come up with organizations that might align with. And then we have, like you would do in the investigative, we investigate, we do our due diligence, everything from relationship to looking under the hood the best that we can before we bridge the introduction. Now, when I'm serving couples or families and helping them think about their, what we call, you know, their strategic philanthropy or their stewardship, I don't charge anything for it. I just want to serve them, because part of my objective, and I say this with every couple, the two things that are going to happen when we kind of start running and journeying together is they're going to begin a spiritual journey together as a couple and as a family greater than they ever experienced. Mm-hmm. Because that's just where I am spiritually, that I believe that once we engage and we start seeing lives changed, it makes us feel like, wow, we're making a difference when we're doing something that's good. And then always when you define what it is that you want to accomplish, you give more, or you're more intentional, you're more proactive. You move from reactive to proactive in giving. In other words, you're actually finding organizations and things that align with your interests.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now I'm going to flip the script back on you in the sense, in the sense of there's probably people out there wondering, how did you get to this point? How does someone get to that point? What was your mission? And at what point in time in your growth did you say, this is my mission and this is how I'm going to approach it?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I'm 57, so 19 years ago. Actually, it was 20 years ago this last March. 20 years ago this last March, I was in a life coaching program. And we had what was considered a Dream Masters weekend, where the men were a part of the coaching program. It was a once a quarter for 3 years. And the wives were invited to be a part of a weekend experience. And it was in that weekend that I came up with what I would consider my life mission and calling, which is to assist and serve 1,000 organizations and families to realize $1 billion in effective stewardship and philanthropy. And so that became kind of my vision 20 years ago. Of course, what I didn't know is within the next 6 months, I was a part of a company, a publicly traded company came along, tapped on the door and said, we want to acquire you and buy you. And so that gave me a lane to start serving on ministry boards for about a year and to do some things at the back door as mm-hmm. I was growing the book of business that I was managing so that we could sell. And on day 365, I tapped out. So I was 38. And so it's been 19 years ago that I really set out doing what I'm now currently doing, to partner, to assist and serve organizations and families to realize $1 billion in effective stewardship. And I can look back and say, I've achieved working with organizations over 1,000 families and couples and organizations and over $1 billion. But now it's full court press because I still have a lot of enthusiasm.
as anybody that knows you knows.
Alan, I would have started this show with a hug. Come on, even virtually.
Well, and which we would have if we could have. Which actually, so are you in Georgia right now?
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're flying out here tomorrow?
That's correct. I'll be in Orange County tomorrow.
Okay. Well, if not tomorrow, Wednesday, we'll get that hug.
That'd be great.
Okay. So give us some examples for those people. And actually, we'll just give us one for now. We'll take a break and we'll come back to it. But give us an example of, and I know we're going to be talking to someone on Wednesday, but either one for tomorrow or one for Wednesday, give us an example of one of the organizations that you're working with and why you chose to work with them.
Yeah, well, one that's, you know, right off of a relationship, because I was just with them for several days in Cody, Wyoming. We brought a group of supporters together to go deeper and to look under the hood of this particular organization. The founder of this organization actually went in the late 1990s. He went to go become the Iranian Olympic baseball coach as a Christian. And when he was there, the public story is that a mullah became a follower of Christ. And then he was able to journey and to lead a number of others to Christ. And he came back and he was a business owner. And his wife felt called to sell their business. That's to do more of what he experienced. And now they're doing ministry work in about 180 countries around the world. And it's been pretty cool. So it's been 25 years. Another example would be as an organization that I'm very familiar with, that I run with, but it's more domestic. It's in the foster care space. You know, a part of my wife and I's interest is that we feel that the largest kind of people group in the world by number is children. Mm-hmm. Kids in orphan care, foster care, and the yet to be born. So kids in foster care, man, that's a bottom of the barrel. That's a tough road. So there's a group that I'm very engaged with and involved with, trying to empower and equip the families that bring kids into their home so that their home can be a forever home, potentially for adoption for kids that are in foster care. Because foster care kids, the average stay with a family is only about 18 months. And so to equip and to train and to empower the family when they say, hey, we have the heart and the love that we want to bring a child into our home, why not empower them to succeed, to maybe let that be a forever family for that child.
All right. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to be right back. If you are out there, Steve, give us the website that they can go to if they want to gather more information.
Certainly. Well, doinggoodbetter.org, just as it sounds, doinggoodbetter.org. That's where I'm serving families and couples. If on an organizational standpoint, if there was an organization or a nonprofit or a ministry that needed some help in the donor relations lane from strategy, that would be developmentservicesgroup.com, developmentservicesgroup.com. The reason we came up with that title is that we want to become an in-source for a season. We want to be a part of the team and the mission and the ethos of the organization.
All right. So we're going to take a break. If you just heard that, if you want to pull up one of those sites and follow along with us, we'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We are talking with Steve Caliber, and we are talking about doing good better. Doesn't get much better than that. So, Steve, when we went to break, you were giving us examples of the type of missions that are out there, the type of organizations, and the good that they're doing.
Yeah, there's literally thousands of organizations, whether they're faith-based or they're not. They're making the difference in the lives of kids. In fact, right there in Orange County, Alan, I've mentioned to you before, an organization that's working with kids that have various life obstacles and challenges, auditory processing and different challenges, but they're being trained in the arts to bring out their hearts and their talents that are unrecognized. I literally, a few months ago, was asked to facilitate a luncheon, and a blind girl that had pretty extreme autism comes out. She was blind, had autism, comes out in front of the group, and we turned on a little speaker with some music. And it was like Pavarotti. I couldn't believe it. She was like 12 years old. Everyone in the room just got teared up because, you know, God's given such incredible blessings to people. And here's this unique grouping of kids and children that don't have an outlet if it wasn't for this particular organization. So there's such an assortment of organizations, whether it be across the country or around the world. The biggest thing is just for people to open up their hearts and to be proactive and be intentional to find what resonates with them and where they want to roll up their sleeves and get involved.
And you mentioned foster kids before we went to break. Yep. And I wanted to add something to that from the investigative side is that is one of the areas in which human traffickers prey on the most. Mm-hmm. And it's a horrible thought to think, but the human traffickers understand that many times when kids get out of foster care, they don't have a place to go.
Yeah, I would say when they know that kids are in foster care, and there are five typical outcomes of a child that's in foster care, especially during their teen years. And none of the five are good.
Yeah. And that's the sad part. So when you mentioned, you know, working with one of the nonprofits, that is, they are going after that, that particular population because it is a population that's so at risk. Mm-hmm. And, but that's the whole idea of doing good better is, you know, there's government entities that are trying to come up with ways to help, but it's not working to the level that, that the numbers are going down. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to deal with people that have dedicated their lives to that particular subject just touches my heart. And I'm just so glad that that they're out there doing it. And there's so many times in which I will be talking with somebody and they might say something about, you know, something that I've done or whatever. And I go, you're doing the heavy lifting every day. Every day you're doing the heavy lifting. I love it. I honor you. So, but anyway, that's an area obviously that's close to my heart anytime that it's dealing with kids and the issues that, that they're having to deal with. Now, one of the most amazing things that I learned, and I learned it from someone who spoke at one of your events, and that was how philanthropy can be set up in ways that the donor gets to decide where the money would, you know, end up. And rather than have it go to the government in the form of taxes, it goes to help people in need. So can you share a little bit about how that works?
Yeah, that's a part of the strategic philanthropy conversation. So really it comes down to just one question. When I'm speaking in front of groups, and maybe, Alan, this is how you might have heard me tee this up, the person that spoke into it. The one question is simple. Pay taxes or give more.
Yeah.
Once we decide the answer to that question, which I think most people would say, I don't want to pay taxes. I want to figure out how to make a difference and support an organization. Then it's just details, whether it be ownership of a company, piece of property, real estate. If you're an equity owner in a company, you can actually carve and put into donor advised accounts or create a family foundation depending on the net worth. And there's a lot of things you could do for taking a tax deduction immediately, and then income from that can go directly to the foundation. So you're not paying taxes. So you can actually get a tax deduction. And then revenue or income from that share of interest can go directly to your donor advised account that's non-taxable. Of course, it's owned by the donor advised account, but you can, or the holding company, but you can give direction to how you want it sent. And there's a lot of different illustrations around that. Here's numbers, say, for somebody to understand how this would work. Let's say that you owned stock in a company that was worth 100 grand, just to be simple, 100 grand. And you own that stock, you could put 20% into a donor advised account. That means that you could immediately take a deduction of $20,000. But then if that company was producing, or your $100,000 in stock shares was producing, say, $40,000 a year of income, since you've put 20% in the foundation, $10,000 a year would go directly into the donor advised account because that's who owns it, so that you're not paying taxes on $10,000. It goes directly to your account so you can give it. In other words, if you're receiving $40,000, you're going to pay taxes, then make a contribution.
Right. And that's the whole thing. And I've always wondered, first of all, I don't know why some accountants don't explain this better. But I know, again, when I was either you were explaining it, and I think that you also not only explained it some, but then brought up somebody who was an accountant who explained it in even greater detail. And that's the part is to give examples like you just did, you know, that that once you understand that, it's that thing of once you learn it, you can't unlearn it. Once you learn it, it's like, okay, well, then that's what I want to do, because you're either going to give it to a government that right now there's a lot of us questioning where that money ended up going anyway, you know, or it's going to go to places where you know it's doing good. And that to me was one of the biggest aha moments of understanding that point, you know, that, you know, I realized that, you know, that a lot of people, they're working hard. They're just getting, you know, it's like, okay, I don't have a huge amount that I can do this with because I'm putting it all into taxes. And you go, well, wait a minute. You mean I can just shift it? That to me is such a huge thing.
Now, I use a business, like if you have stock, but even if you have money in like an IRA account, a lot of people don't realize that you can send money directly from your IRA or retirement account directly to the nonprofit, which becomes a non-taxable event for you because you're not technically receiving the funds to then give it. You could give money directly from your retirement account or your IRA directly to an organization. If you're going to give it, why receive it, pay taxes on it, and then give?
Right. Yeah. Either you or them are getting shortchanged.
Yes, that's correct.
I just thought of this while you said it. Would this also work for crypto? Because right now that's kind of a big thing, and there's a lot of people making money in that area, but yet. Even in like a Coinbase account, they're saying the government now wants to make sure that they have all of your tax paying information. And as this crypto grows, is it the same situation? Can it go straight from Coinbase?
Yeah, same thing. It just depends on the receiving entity. So just like giving stock out of an account or cash directly from an account, retirement account, you could do the same with crypto. The organization has to be able to receive crypto. Now, most of the time, I'm not saying always, but when you do a transaction like that, it sells immediately and then transfers in cash, but it's all happening within your accounts. Or crypto, you could send a certain percent, a certain amount of whether it be Bitcoin, Ethereum, Ripple, any of the options out there, you can send the actual coins.
Right. And that's because as I was listening to you, I was thinking, okay, if I cash it and then send it, I'm paying taxes. If I just send it directly, so that's what I was saying. If they're set up to receive it, it just seems like it's another avenue to be able to do the same thing.
Yeah, the biggest thing for this kind of segment of the conversation is that be creative. Think out of the box ways to literally pay less in taxes and give more. Whether it be talking to your financial advisor, talk to the organization and say, hey, we want to send you some money and here are some options, whether it be, real estate, something of value, whatever. But usually your professionals kind of in your world should be able to give you some direction. But Alan, you're absolutely spot on that. I'm amazed often that how many accountants and CPAs don't know some of the, call it simple blocking and tackling, because there's so much to know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand it either. But I'm glad when I, and again, like I said, if I go to one of the events that you have, besides the fact that I'm learning about what somebody is doing, oftentimes in another part of the world, and it's like, oh my God, they're training doctors there, and then moving on to another area and training more doctors, so they're leaving more doctors or pastors or whatever it is. But at the same time, having somebody come up that then talks about, if your accountant hasn't told you this, here's how you can do it. I love it.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about now the future. What do you see moving forward at this point?
Just in the space of philanthropy.
Yes, in your space.
I see an acceleration. Younger generation wants to be very generous. Current older generation wants to be very generous. What we're seeing is that people are thinking about where we headed. If you're in a spiritual context, you hear people talking about, man, there's so much going on in the world. Is this an alignment of end times? Is this a doomsday? There's all kinds of things on the internet from asteroids that are coming toward the earth. So people are sensing kind of this acceleration of, we've been blessed, or if we have been blessed, what do we want to do to make a difference in the lives of others? And I remember this great quote. A lot of people don't remember it, but at the time, Rockefeller was the richest man in the world, a little over 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he was asked by a reporter, Mr. Rockefeller, when you die, how much are you going to leave? Of course, the reporter wanted to know, what's your net worth? And he said, all of it. And that's really the point, is that we need to plan and to think wisely for our marriages and our families. But at the same time, the more that we bless, we'll be blessed.
So we've got a little bit more time. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the international things that are being done that some of your clients or partners are doing, and if it resonates with somebody, how they can get in touch with you or with them to move forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then even just to kind of go back for just a second with regard to the acceleration, people are recognizing that they have way more than they need. I was, Alan, working with a couple recently. I was just with them a couple months ago. They're in their early 80s, and they are expressing to me what their net worth is. And I said, well, what's your burn rate? First of all, they told me what their burn rate was, and it was a lot for somebody that was in their early 80s, because, you know, how active are you in traveling? Well, let's say that the burn rate was $1 million a year. And they've already given inheritances to their kids and grandkids, everybody set up. And I said, well, how much money do you have still in your personal net worth? And they told me. And I said, look, best case scenario, you live 20 years. Put $20 million in your checkbook and die, give the rest of it away.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that complicated.
Right, right. Wow. Yes, I should have disconnected the doorbell.
No worries.
Now, in that situation, depending on where that money is or how they have it, what's going to happen if they don't let it go to have it get put out to charities? Do they have, I've heard horror stories.
Yeah, it's a very affluent family that has all their ducks in order. So right. It would come down to more inheritance for their kids and grandkids. But they were saying, our kids and grandkids already have plenty. What more can we do? We don't want to do more. We don't want to ruin them. It's a thin line between empowering and enabling.
Exactly.
On a global scale, Alan, to your question, what I'm finding is that the gateway to getting into some countries or to some communities has become harder. So there's been a little bit of a shift to getting into some countries from the perspective of wanting to do good to reach others through humanitarian relief, clean water or healthy water solutions, different medicines or medical aid or medical relief, food supplies, nutrition. Going into some places and providing a lane for educating kids. You know, the cycle of breaking the cycle of poverty is to helping young adults realize that they should, if possible, to get married after they have an education and then have kids. So here's the order. Get an education, get married, then have kids. You have about a 93% opportunity to break the cycle of poverty if you do those three things in that order. But of course, as we know, a lot of the third world doesn't function in that way. So then you're in the continuation of a cycle of poverty. So there's a lot of organizations and entry points globally to get parents and for young adults to realize that getting an education is key. Now, education doesn't mean like in America, getting a doctorate degree or a PhD or even going to college. We're just talking about completing a certain relevant grade level that's culturally relevant for them, whether it be what we'll call it eighth grade or high school.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think more and more there's an issue with indoctrination instead of education.
Yeah,
you know, where if you have, depending on the regime that's running that country, there's a struggle to bring in actual education if it goes against the indoctrination that they want. And I know that's another thing which makes, in some cases, for some of the missionaries that I know that are working in these other countries, it can make it quite dangerous.
Yeah. A part of the shift, too, just to kind of share with you over the last, call it 30 years. Now, there's been some triggers, 08, 09, and 08 through 10. That was a very difficult couple of years. COVID, which was like a bizarre time of world history. There's events that take place on a global scale that make people think differently about giving, stewardship, philanthropy. But there is definitely this movement of, used to just be relationship based, and then we went into a season where it was all about matrix and results, and it was hardcore, you know, what's the best for the cheapest? And people have come on to learn that, you know, an organization can manipulate how they do their spreadsheets to make something look a lot cheaper than it actually is. Now we're in this season of being relationally engaged. But before that, we're in tune with what is it that we're wanting to do to make a difference. So that's the season that we're in. Kind of as I spoke at the beginning of this conversation, is an individual or a couple really thinking through, wow, what is it that's most meaningful to me? Whether somebody helps coach them through or journey with them, which is what I've done many, many, many times, or it's them going through a process of saying, where do I lean in? Where do I get most excited? And then looking at, okay, we've talked about foster care. Well, what in the foster care space is it that I'm really wanting to see the needle moved?
Yeah.
And then defining what it is. Once we fine tune our heart to what that one thing is, and we start going for it, oh boy, it unleashes resources, because it's not about the money. It's about our heart.
Oh, I love that. And with that, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about some of the relationships and why it's important. In the news, we're seeing that you know, the government has been putting money into what they're claiming are NGOs, and we're learning that in many cases that money didn't go anywhere close to where it was supposed to. So let's talk about the importance of relationships and being able to have more control over that. We'll be right back. You're watching or listening to Answers Network. Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. West Shield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through. Not just the young person, but the parents, needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. West Shield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. West Shield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind. We contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children. Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step. And we're back. You are watching or listening to Answers Network. With us is Steve Caliper, and we're talking about doing good better all over the world. So, Steve, let's talk about relationships. And again, I left off with, in the news, you know, we're learning a lot more about what's been happening to the monies that we thought the government was taking and how they were using it. Let's talk about how having relationships really allows us to make better choices.
Yeah, certainly. I'm not an expert on any of where the U.S. or USAID monies were going. certainly I'm familiar with, and I know a lot of things from the field. You hear things, and you know, I'm not trying to speak into the yeses and nos, but there was a lot of waste. I think that people would agree that there was a lot of waste and a lot of favors behind the scenes, and a lot of deals through you know, secret handshakes, call it that. But to me, everything is about relationships. It's the power of a relationship. And being able to be in relationship with organizations, whether it be on a casual basis, a couple of times a year, coming to a lunch or gathering, you know, being a part of things, having them be proactive with you. And let me say why I said proactive. They should be pursuing us as an organization to say, we want to continue to share with you who we are, what we do, why we're doing it, what are our results, what is it that we're trying to accomplish and achieve, here's our obstacles and challenges, what we need, and then we're going to report back to you. It's in their court to do that. And so I would just say that if an organization that you're running with or supporting isn't, be thinking about how much of a relationship are they willing to put into it to mirror you in a sense.
Wow. I think that's so well put, because that's one of the things that I've noticed is, you know, having, you know, some of the organizations that I've met, some of which have been through you, is them getting back in touch with me and saying, by the way, we just want to let you know, this is what we're doing now. And we're going to be in such and such an area. And if you'd like to see for yourself, if you'd like to come out and join us, if, you know, there's, you feel like you're a part of it. And I think, unfortunately, I've seen other situations in where they're like, okay, as long as you keep writing us a check, we'll leave you alone. And I haven't found that to be the case at all. And to me, at least the way that I see it now, there might be people that are really busy and they're like, you know, I don't have time for all this. That's why I write you a check. That's great too. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But I want to know these things. And I think many people that I know, when I sit around and talk with some of my friends and they talk about what they're involved with, that's the way they talk about it, is it's what I'm involved with, not just where I send my money. So,
And then we know too, that when you write big checks to organizations, you know, in comparison to other supporters, there's a high likelihood that they're going to lean in and want to be in a relationship with you more, because of how much that you're maybe contributing. So, but anyway, that's true regardless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I've noticed is it, at least with some of the ones I've spoken with, it didn't seem to matter, you know, how much somebody was
a little. Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't matter. It was, we appreciate you. We want you to know what it is we're doing, and you're welcome to come out and join us. See the things that we're doing. And we're also listening if you have things you want to share. And that to me really touched me to where I feel like I'm a part of something rather than I'm just observing from a distance.
Yeah, that's my philosophy. As I had somebody say last week, the Caliper method, to me, it's about us journeying and being on a mission together. Certainly, there's those that wake up every day. This is what they are feeling called to do. But often from a, call it a donor or an investor perspective, it's not about what they're doing. It's about what we're called to do together. It just happens to be that they're the ones that wake up actually doing it.
Yes.
Our call might be that we've been blessed, or we know how to make money, or we know how to do other things. We might be able to be a voice, come to something, we're good networkers, but we have another role in the mission.
Right. But we can all offer something that will then help. And I think that's great. You know, all of us can't be, you know,
on the front lines.
Yeah, exactly. So we've actually only got less than a minute. Anything that you want to share before we sign off?
No, I just appreciate, Alan, that you've invited me to be a part of this conversation today. You know, as you've known me for many, many years, I do just want to lean in and be a part of things that I feel called to do. I get excited about a number of things. I feel like I've been blessed with a talent, resources, and an enthusiasm that, you know, I just want to play my part. But a part of my call is not just to partner with organizations or just partner with families or couples, but to hopefully be enthusiastic that it would encourage others to say, man, am I a corner of the world? I can do X. And sometimes, let me phrase it this way. My family motto for 20 years has been, we do our best and let God do the rest.
There you go.
About 10 years ago, my personal mantra is, if God's touched me to do something, to engage, I don't do what the human nature is to look at my checkbook and look at my calendar. I say, God, if you've touched me to get involved with something, whatever it is, I'm in.
You know what? Your quote is, I think, a great thing for us to close on. Let's all do our best and let's let God do the rest.
Amen. Thanks, Steve. Awesome. Amen. Thank you. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
All right. See ya.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.